Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We have the strongest and most powerful, by far, military in the world, and we will easily prevail. We're already substantially ahead of our time projections, but whatever the time is, it's okay, whatever it takes.
The U.S. is sending more troops and fighter jets to the Middle East as the death toll mounts in the region. After the U.S. and Israel launched an unprovoked attack on Iran 4 days ago, Iranian drones have hit U.S. embassies in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, while Israeli troops move deeper into Lebanon. This comes as Secretary of State Marco Rubio defends the preemptive U.S. strikes on Iran.
The president made the very wise decision. We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties.
We'll get the latest on the U.S.-Israeli attacks on Iran and look at the escalating regional war. Plus, we speak to economist Michael Hudson, who says the U.S.-Israeli attack was to prevent peace, not to advance it. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Iran's state broadcaster says U.S. and Israeli attacks have killed 787 people since President Trump joined Prime Minister Netanyahu in a massive bombing campaign, striking 153 cities and more than 500 sites across Iran since Saturday. Much of the violence is directed at Iran's capital, Tehran, where thunderous explosions rang out for a third night in a row and into the daylight hours. Residents woke to scenes of widespread destruction, with city streets littered with debris from collapsed buildings. One attack hit Nuluhar Square in eastern Tehran, flattening buildings and killing over 20 people. Dropsite News reports two explosions hit the area, a smaller strike followed by a larger double-tap attack that devastated much of the neighborhood. On Monday, mourners in the southern city of Minab held a mass funeral Monday for 165 schoolgirls and staff killed Saturday on the first day of the U.S.-Israeli strikes when a missile hit a girls' school. Meanwhile, red alert sirens have been activated across much of Israel, with the Israeli military reporting missile interceptions over West Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, and Eilat. On Monday, Ali Larijani, the secretary of the Iranian Supreme National Security Council, warned, quote, "Iran, unlike the United States, has prepared itself for a long war," he said. Iran's nuclear agency says there's been no leakage of radiological materials after a strike on its Natanz nuclear facility by the U.S.-Israeli coalition. Officials said the strike damaged the entrance to the site in Isfahan province, but there were no signs of increased radiation. On Monday, Rafael Grossi of the International Atomic Energy Agency said he'd seen no indication that Iran's nuclear facilities have been damaged during the latest U.S.-Israeli strikes.
We haven't seen major military activity targeting the nuclear facilities. We have been looking at different satellite images. There might be something there, but not significant or comparable in any way to what we saw last time.
Global energy prices are climbing, and Iran's continued attacks on oil and gas infrastructure across the Gulf. On Monday, a commander in Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps declared the Strait of Hormuz closed, saying any ships attempting to cross the narrow shipping channel will be set afire. About a fifth of all oil consumed worldwide passes through the strait each day. At least three oil tankers have been struck so far. Qatar's state-owned fossil fuel company suspended all liquefied natural gas production after two of its facilities were hit. That followed a drone attack that halted operations at Saudi Arabia's largest domestic oil refinery. Oil production has also halted in Iraqi Kurdistan and in the Tamar gas field in the Mediterranean Sea off Israel's coast. Saudi authorities say two Iranian drones hit the U.S. embassy in Riyadh, causing what they described as a limited fire and minor damage. The strikes came after the U.S. State Department urged Americans in 14 Mideast countries to leave. Meanwhile, Middle East Eye reports the Trump administration stonewalling requests by some Gulf states to replenish their supplies of air defense interceptor missiles, which typically cost about $4 million each, amidst reports that even the Pentagon may run low on interceptors in a matter of weeks. Iran's been launching $20,000 one-way attack drones at Gulf nations hosting U.S. military bases, with about 10% of the drones slipping past defenses. Israeli soldiers have invaded parts of southern Lebanon in Israel's largest escalation of fighting there since it signed a ceasefire deal with Hezbollah in late 2024. Israeli airstrikes have hit the capital, Beirut, for a second consecutive day, targeting residential neighborhoods. They also struck Lebanon's Bekaa Valley and the southern suburbs of Beirut. The Lebanese health ministry says the death toll from the attacks has climbed to 51, with 154 people injured. Meanwhile, Hezbollah claimed an attack on an air base in northern Israel. In the Gaza Strip, the World Food Program says a border crossing pivotal to providing food and supplies to Palestinians is reopening after Israel closed Gaza's borders on Saturday as it began its attacks on Iran. Despite the reopening of the Kerem Shalom crossing, human rights and aid groups have accused Israel of reinstating a starvation policy in Gaza. Philippe Lazzarini, the head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, wrote, quote, "After more than 2 years of unspeakable suffering and a spreading man-made famine, people still lack the most basic supplies despite increases in aid since the ceasefire," Lazzarini said. President Trump made his first public remarks Monday since unilaterally bringing the United States into a war with Iran. Trump spoke from a White House ceremony where he awarded the Medal of Honor to three Army soldiers, even as the Pentagon said the U.S. military death toll from what it's calling Operation Epic Fury had risen to six. Trump dedicated a few moments to honor the service members who died before launching into a lengthy monologue about his renovations to the White House, including his plans to build a new ballroom.
"I picked those drapes in my first term. I always liked gold. But I think we can save a lot of money. I just saved curtains. But it will be. It'll be spectacular. It'll be the most beautiful ballroom. I believe it's because I built many a ballroom. I believe it's going to be the most beautiful ballroom anywhere in the world."
On Capitol Hill, Secretary of State Marco Rubio joined top generals and intelligence officials in a classified briefing for select members of Congress Monday. After the closed-door briefing, Rubio told reporters the president had opted to join Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's planned war in Iran rather than trying to stop the Israeli assault or even to avoid getting involved.
"The president made the very wise decision. We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties."
Meanwhile, MS Now is reporting that when FBI Director Kash Patel fired a dozen FBI personnel last week because they were part of the investigation into Donald Trump's mishandling of classified documents, Patel targeted an elite counter-espionage unit that investigates threats from foreign adversaries and specializes in Iran. The U.S. military may have used artificial intelligence tools made by tech company Anthropic to aid in its deadly air attack on Iran. The Wall Street Journal and Axios reported the Trump administration's decision came despite Anthropic's announcement last week rejecting the use of its Claude AI model from being used for mass domestic surveillance or in fully autonomous weapons systems. The Journal reported U.S. military officials use the AI tools for intelligence purposes and to help select targets. On Friday, President Trump ordered all federal agencies to stop using Claude, denouncing Anthropic as a, quote, radical left AI company, unquote, after Anthropic refused to concede to a Pentagon ultimatum Friday for full access to its AI tools. On Capitol Hill, calls are growing for lawmakers to regulate online betting platforms known as prediction markets amidst allegations of insider trading that includes profiteering from U.S. military strikes. Bloomberg reports $529 million was traded on contracts tied to the timing of the strikes on the Polymarket prediction market. One Polymarket account called MAGA My Man made more than $500,000 betting on the U.S. attack on Iran, with the first trade placed just over an hour before the news broke publicly. This echoes similar bets on the U.S. military operation Venezuela placed on Polymarket and other prediction markets, including Kalshi. Donald Trump Jr. sits on Polymarket's advisory board, and his venture capital firm has invested tens of millions of dollars in the company. Both the Justice Department and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau ended active investigations into Polymarket after Trump returned to the White House last year. In Texas, voters are taking to the polls today for a closely watched Democratic primary between Congressmember Jasmine Crockett and State Representative James Tallarico, who are vying for a highly contested Senate seat in a heated midterm election that could determine which political party will control Congress during Trump's final 2 years in office. Incumbent Republican Senator John Cornyn, who served in the Senate for over two decades, is facing off against Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton in the GOP primary. Both are Trump supporters. Crockett is a progressive who staunchly denounced Trump's policies, while her opponent, Tallarico, has appealed to Republican voters and put his Christian faith at the center of his campaign. In Minnesota, the Justice Department's indicted another 30 people on federal crimes for participating in a peaceful protest in January at a St. Paul church where one of the pastors worked for ICE. Attorney General Pam Bondi confirmed over two dozen people have been arrested. The new indictments come about a month after independent journalists Don Lemon and Georgia Fort and prominent civil rights activist and attorney Nkema Levy Armstrong were also charged for what the Attorney General called their roles in the protest at City's church. They were covering it. In related news, a federal judge has summoned Minnesota's U.S. Attorney Daniel Rosen and several ICE officials to appear in a St. Paul court today over violations in immigration cases. The officials are facing civil and criminal contempt charges for repeatedly ignoring court orders, including refusing to return belongings such as cell phones, cash, and passports to immigrants who are released from detention. This comes as a separate federal judge has ordered the Trump administration to bring back a wrongfully deported immigrant to the United States. Emilia Pena Jimenez was sent to Mexico despite two court orders mandating his release from detention in Minnesota. A court filing said Jimenez may have been denied access to a lawyer before being forced to sign removal documents that were not translated into Spanish. His case is among hundreds of complaints that have been filed in Minnesota courts. And prominent Iraqi human rights defender and feminist advocate Yanar Mohammed was killed in an armed attack on her home in Baghdad on Monday. Yanar had reportedly returned to Iraq from Canada a few days before her murder by two unidentified gunmen who opened fire as she stood outside her home. Yanar Mohammed was the co-founder and president of the Organization of Women's Freedom in Iraq In 2003, she founded the first women's shelter in Iraq to protect women from trafficking and so-called honor killings, becoming the target of death threats over her activism. She was a frequent guest on Democracy Now! Following the 2003 U.S.-led invasion of Iraq. We spoke to her in 2022 when over two dozen people were killed in Baghdad after armed supporters of the powerful Iraqi cleric Muqtada al-Sadr clashed with government forces.
And the strange thing is that those who started the demonstration that led to the clashes, to the killing, and to the bombing around the city, nobody dares to challenge them or to speak any bad word against them. It's as if I'm living the days of Saddam Hussein all over again, where everybody is scared of a single person and nobody dares to say anything. It's a terrible situation.
Inar Mohammed was killed yesterday. To see all our interviews with her, go to democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
The U.S. is sending more troops and fighter jets in the Middle East as the regional war expands 4 days after the U.S. and Israel assassinated Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and struck sites across Iran. Iranian authorities say at least 787 people have died so far. On Monday, a mass funeral is held for the 165 people killed in an attack on a girls' school in the Iranian southern city of Minab. Most of the people killed were children. UNESCO condemned the strike, saying, quote, the killing of pupils in a place dedicated to learning constitutes a grave violation of the protection afforded to schools under international humanitarian law, unquote. Israel is also accused of striking the Gandhi Hospital in Tehran. Iran has retaliated by launching 4 days of strikes on Israel and U.S. allies across the region. On Monday, Iranian drones hit the U.S. embassy in Saudi Arabia. The Pentagon's now revealed six U.S. soldiers died in an Iranian attack on a military facility in Kuwait. The U.S. State Department's urged U.S. citizens in over a dozen Middle East countries to leave. The war has sent oil and gas prices skyrocketing. On Monday, a commander in Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps threatened to set ablaze any ship that passes through the Strait of Hormuz. Meanwhile, Israeli ground forces are moving deeper into Lebanon as Israel and Hezbollah exchange rocket fire. On Monday, Israel struck the Beirut office of Amanar TV. Israeli strikes have killed at least 52 people in Lebanon so far. The Trump administration continues to give shifting rationales for why it attacked Iran amidst ongoing negotiations over Iran's nuclear program. Secretary of State Marco Rubio spoke Monday.
The president made the very wise decision. We knew that there was going to be an Israeli action. We knew that that would precipitate an attack against American forces. And we knew that if we didn't preemptively go after them before they launched those attacks, we would suffer higher casualties.
In a social media post early today, President Trump said the United States could fight wars, quote, forever, claiming it has, quote, virtually unlimited supply of weapons. Trump expressed a similar message at the White House Monday.
We have the strongest and most powerful by far military in the world, and we will easily prevail. We're already substantially ahead of our time projections, but whatever the time is, it's okay. Whatever it takes, we will always. And we have, right from the beginning, we projected 4 to 5 weeks. But we have capability to go far longer than that.
We begin today's show with Nigar Mortazavi, Iranian-American journalist, host of the Iran Podcast, senior fellow at the Center for International Policy. Nigar, thanks so much for joining us again after our special broadcast on Saturday when the strikes began. Can you talk about what's happened on the ground at this point? I know that most of the internet, almost all of the internet, is down in Iran.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Yes. So as you said, on the first day of the attack, we saw that elementary school in the city of Mena being one of the targets, 160 children killed. And I was just looking at videos from the funeral of those children in that city. And there seems to be a very, very large crowd essentially coming out in that town to grieve for those children. We've seen civilian infrastructure being part of the targeting, and the death toll on the Iranian side is rising over 500. The latest I saw, mostly civilians. And it's just very difficult to get in touch with people. Communication is very limited. And it's just this feeling of horror and anxiety for those who are on the ground in Tehran, especially. People are hearing explosions, and it's not very clear what the targets are. And those who can leave the city have been either left or have been trying to leave the capital. But the attacks are also across the country, and it's just reminding people very quickly of the June war. Last year, the 12-day war, when Israel attacked Iran and then the U.S. joined, but then also starting to, people who remember the 1980s war between Iran and Iraq are starting to have sort of memories of that era, which was also a very horrific war and lasted very long.
And Nigar, could you talk about the three-person leadership council that's managing the day-to-day affairs as the country's leaders attempt to decide on a successor to Ayatollah Khamenei?
Sure. Article 111 of the Iranian Constitution had already predicted this, that in the case of the passing or death, in this case, killing of the supreme leader, immediately a council is formed consisting of the president, which now is the moderate Masoud Pezeshkian, the head of judiciary, conservative cleric right now, Ghulam Hossein Mohseni Ejei, and then also one clergy member of the Guardian Council, the powerful Guardian Council, which is Ali Reza Arafi, a fairly conservative and hardline clergy also. And then they will be in charge of essentially making decisions and running the country in place of a supreme leader until the successor is picked by the leadership council. And so that's the process. But this, it's in a wartime. I don't know if this decision is going to happen right now. It depends on also how long the war is going to continue. There seems to be no end in sight, even though the U.S. had announced that this is going to be short. I think from the press conferences yesterday, it's just not clear how long it's going to go. So I don't know if they can sort of do this succession during the wartime, or they're going to see this as a transition. This is an interim council, and then potentially choose a supreme leader after the war is over. And I'll just end with the fact that the a clergy from the Guardian Council, Ali Reza Arafi, seems to be one of the likely candidates, at least that's being talked about, as potentially being the successor. But there's also other candidates who had been on a list from the past.
And President Trump has, in public statements, offered, quote, complete immunity to any members of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, who laid down their arms. What's your sense of how the IRGC is functioning right now, given especially this quite impressive resistance that the Iranian government has launched against not only the United States and Israel, but many of the Gulf states that have been maintaining U.S. bases?
So, you know, the U.S. has military superiority, absolutely. And they've caused a lot of damage from day one, including killing the country's supreme leader. But I don't think they understand the dynamics of this country. There seems to be a total lack of understanding. And when you listen to the comments of the president himself, Secretary of State, the presser yesterday with the Secretary of War, It's just, I don't think they understand the situation they're dealing with. You know, many of us Iran analysts had been warning that starting a war with Iran is going to potentially be even more difficult and challenging than the war in Iraq, which already was a big failure on the U.S. side. And the irony is that President Trump himself had been attacking, if not mocking, past presidents for starting these kind of endless, unnecessary wars in the Middle East, including attacking President Obama for thinking or potentially wanting to attack Iran. And now he's become a president that has attacked Iran for the third time. The first time, 2020, assassination of top general Soleimani. Second time last year, Midnight Hammer. And this is the third time. And so the Iranian thinking, or sort of the policy, the defense doctrine or posturing in Iran, is that he's going to keep coming back for us unless we fight back. And this is exactly what we're seeing the Iranians doing, essentially playing the long game here, that first of all, they see this as an existential threat. They're fighting a war of survival, and that's why they're essentially doing fighting with all their might, whatever is left of it, and that they're not going to stop soon until they have inflicted, as they think, enough pain so that this doesn't keep coming again. Because in 6 months and 8 months, in a year, this mow the grass sort of policy that Israel has vis-a-vis Gaza, and of course now we're seeing in Lebanon, that's something that the Iranians want to end.
To say the least, Nagar, in these last 30 seconds, you've been critical of the Iranian government, but you're also, to say the least, fiercely critical of what's taken place right now.
Absolutely. I mean, it is a repressive state. That's a fact. Nobody denies that. And how the government treats its own citizens. We just saw protests in January, thousands of people being killed by this government. But you can hold both truths at the same time, that the military intervention is not going to help that situation. This is not helping Iranian protesters, Iranian dissidents, or any Iranian who's living on the ground. I think that's just a fact that's being missed, that somehow this is helping. This is going to bring better governance or democracy, nation building to Iran. We just haven't seen the U.S. have a successful track record time and again when they've tried this military intervention in the region. And I honestly don't think that is the goal for the U.S. or for Israel. This is a geopolitical situation. They want a weakened Iran for the Israelis. I think they potentially want a failed state situation, a country that poses no threat to them and that can potentially go in and attack anytime they want.
Nagar Mortazavi, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Iranian-American journalist, host of the Iran podcast, senior fellow at the Center for International Policy. Coming up, we look at the escalating regional war in the Middle East. We'll speak with Palestinian-American journalist Rami Khoury. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. The U.S. is sending more troops and fighter jets to the Middle East as the death toll mounts in the region after the U.S. and Israel launched an unprovoked attack on Iran on Saturday. Iran's retaliated by striking Israel and U.S. allies in the region. Over the past day, Iranian drones hit U.S. embassies in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. Meanwhile, Israel sent more ground troops into Lebanon as Israel and Hezbollah exchange attacks. We go right now to Rami Khoury, Palestinian-American journalist, distinguished public policy fellow at the American University of Beirut. He's also a non-resident senior fellow at the Arab Center, Washington, D.C. Rami, thanks so much for being with us again. If you can can respond to what has taken place now, this escalation with Israel's escalation with Lebanon and this shifting rationale for why the U.S., though they have said from Marco Rubio to House Speaker Johnson that they were supporting Israel in doing this, that Israel took the first move and that they understood that if Israel attacked Iran, they felt Iran would attack Israel. So Iran would attack the United States. And so Israel was making a preemptive so that United States was making a preemptive move. Sorry, I'm sounding so confused, but the rationales have been very confusing.
Well, it sounds like a new puzzle in the newspaper that we've got to figure out. But this is the conflict.